Welcome to the Ugly Podcast. I'm Lauren.
And I'm Emerson. And we're trying really hard not to try so hard.
Come hang out with us as we talk about our passion for creativity, authenticity, and heart-centered entrepreneurship. Did I say that right?
Yep, definitely.
Hi, this is the Ugly Podcast. I'm Lauren, and I use she, her pronouns.
And I'm Emerson, and I use they, them pronouns.
And we are entrepreneurs and creative people, and we like to talk about stuff.
Yes, and we always forget two things. One is to explain what the Ugly Podcast means, and two is who we are and what we do. So, Lauren, do you want to share who you are and why this is the Ugly Podcast?
Yes. So I am an editor and writing slash creativity coach. And the Ugly Podcast is basically my way of letting go of perfectionism. I didn't create anything for years. And then I realized that I could get myself to create by doing it ugly, basically, and just saying, like, I'm going to make it bad. And then that was my way of pushing past perfectionism. And so then we were working together, and this is a really long explanation. I'm gonna figure out how to make this short, but if this is anybody's like first time listening, we talk all the time, and I loved our conversations about what it's like to be an entrepreneur and all of the struggles that come with that and like showing up authentically. So I was like, let's do a podcast, and that's what we're doing.
Yay. And I love that it's ugly. The heart of it is its ugliness. And I love that about it.
Yeah, I love it too.
And the beauty that comes out of the ugliness. Because our conversations have such like fruitful, interesting things that come up. And it's all coming up because we're letting it be ugly.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not structured. There's like some planning, but very little. Okay, what about you, Emerson? What do you do?
Yes, I am a certified dementia practitioner and an end-of-life doula with a practice called Happy Memories Elder Support, which was initially and still is a life enrichment practice for elders, especially those living with memory loss. But I have shifted recently to focus on supporting people in their own relationship to dementia, the fear and stigma that surrounds it, and how we can find a lot of hope and possibility on the other side. Ways that we can still connect and be ourselves and have meaningful lives. So that is me.
You have that like elevator pitch down really well. I need to work on that.
It's funny because it's evolved really naturally now that I'm doing what I'm doing. It didn't used to feel like it. I used to struggle to explain what I did. And now my program message is so clear to me that it's a lot easier to communicate it.
Yeah. That's really good.
Yeah.
I guess I would say that, because I didn't really talk about like who I work with. So I will say that I work with writers and creatives who let their perfectionism stop them from creating. And I help them manage that and push through that. Just adding that in. Yeah. I will one day also have a good elevator pitch, but it is not this day.
Right now your elevator pitch kind of stops at every level, which is good too.
It does. It stops at every level. Okay. That was perfect. Oh my God.
Good.
So what are we talking about today?
Yeah. So we're talking about small joys, which feels very close to my heart because in a lot of ways, my entire practice is built on this. And it is what I do with elders is, you know, find the small joys that make their lives meaningful. And oftentimes they're very big joys and related to big things like personhood and connection. That's my professional relationship to it. But we also personally have both struggled with mental illness and leaving religion where joy was often not a priority and other things that make it very personally relevant as well.
Mm-hmm. I think joy, I had to start leaning into it, especially as like the world gets darker and more bleak, you know, I have to lean into small joys and find that paradox of living in a very tough world, but where also very delightful things happen. And it's really been getting me through my days.
Yeah, that actually brings up a really good point I wanted to talk about with Small Joys is, and it's good that we're laying the foundation of this from the beginning of the conversation, is that small joys need to coexist with the big bad things in the world. We need those. And there's two things I want to refer folks to for that. One is Ross Gay is a Black author who wrote a book called The Book of Delights. And that is magnificent for looking at joy as it relates to hardship, especially with marginalized identities. And then the other one, which I think you'll really like. So there was this quote that I heard attributed to Kate Bowler. I misquoted it as being from Kate Bowler, and it's actually from a conversation Kate Bowler had with Gary Hagen. So let me read this, and then I'll ask you what you think about it. So this Gary Hagen gentleman, which I wish I had done my research on who he is, but everyone should look this up, as well as me, because I want to listen to this. There is sometimes a sense, if you're a compassionate person, you should be wallowing in the darkness and the gloom 24/7. And that is just a vicious lie. And it's a way to go to sure burnout. And so it actually for us is a discipline of coming back up for air. And one of the statement that this is one I had quoted and heard, that joy is the oxygen of doing hard things. And especially that it is joys is the oxygen for doing the work of justice. So this organization he's part of, he says they're extremely intentional about it, is making sure there's laughter and music and art and silliness.
I love that.
Yeah, I need to go listen to that whole conversation because I think it's going to be really, really rich for this topic. But yeah, I'm curious what you think about that, what comes up for you.
Yeah, that... I really like that quote, especially because, like, whenever something new happens, something new and bad happens, another shooting, another law, like, you know, thing after thing, I usually feel like, okay, well, the world is terrible. I can't do anything. I don't want to create anything. I don't want to post on social media. I don't want to talk to people. I just want to shut down, and it does feel like I can't do my job, which is sharing about creativity and growth, and it's like trying to help inspire that like drive to create and that joy and excitement in creating. Like, I feel like I can't do that when the bad things are happening in the world, but it's so true that we need those things, especially when things are bad in the world, because people need good things to cling on to. And I have a really hard time with like the fear of coming across as like a toxic positivity person, you know? I don't want to like share toxic positivity. I want to share like actual gratitude and like richness in life, you know? Which I think is the joy that quote is talking about. It's not about ignoring the bad things. It's not about like putting your head in the sand, but it's about finding the joy with all of the badness in order to keep going.
Yeah. I think that you, especially with your focus on creativity, can be susceptible to that, you know, how the bad things kind of block it. Because people see creativity as this, like, luxury. And it's something that we're always doing as, like, a recreational activity to just, like, do something fun. And it's, like, it can be actually a really deep processing of our experience of the world and expressing and conveying that. But people really do see it as just like, oh yeah, you know, Lauren's little art project or whatever, you know, whatever their thoughts are.
Yeah. And especially because like when I do like ugly art, it can look very childish. And like, I have gotten some like feelings of that from people of just like, okay, like you're doing your little thing. Like it's kind of a patronizing type of attitude, which is fine. It's not for everybody, but like those little moments of ugly art and scribbling on a page, like it helps me find the smallest bit of levity in the day. And I don't know what I would do without, if I didn't have that. I'd probably just be very upset. Especially because, like, my art isn't, like, if I try to make art that's quote-unquote good, or, like, to actually convey exactly what I'm feeling, or to, like, have a message in what I'm making, like, because it's not professional-looking or good-looking, like, I'm not trained in art at all, it just, like, it'll look childish anyway. And, like, I don't know what I'm trying to say. It's just, like, I don't know. Some people are able to give a message with their art, like, with the outcome of it. And some people can give a message with their art just by creating it in the first place. Like, the act of creating is the message. And that's, I think that's what it is for me.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting because I've started doing ugly art because of you. And often the times that I reach for ugly art where I'm like, oh my gosh, I need to grab some markers and a piece of paper, are moments where things do feel bad. And I do need to find a moment in the midst of that. And just creating, just throwing stuff onto a page is healthy and helps in that process. So yeah, I think you're really grounded in that truth, that it is a beneficial thing, and that it does have its place in a hard world. It has an even more of a place in a hard world.
Yeah.
Your work is important.
Thanks. Yours too. Okay, let's switch to you because I love what you do. The way that you focus on what you can do to find small moments of joy throughout your day. I mean, you do it for people with dementia, but like, it's so helpful for anybody.
Yeah, that's one of the things I really try to get through to people, because so many people see my practice and they're like, oh, so you just help people with dementia. And I'm actually really wanting to work with like all humans on their relationship to their identity and their experience of the world and how they connect with other people, especially because, you know, we may get dementia in the future and we may have a loved one with it. And so I want to work with everyone at any point in their relationship to it. And I love the things I've made around it, and I want to share them more and more because yeah, it is like, it really grounds you in the small joys. And for people who don't know what it is, the Happy Map is basically a tool I designed to very quickly and very succinctly convey a lot of information about a person, about the things they love, like their background, their favorite foods, music, ways they like to spend their time, because that's all the information I wanted to know about the residents I worked with in memory care. And it is incredibly, incredibly powerful just to have that information about someone and what connects them to joy.
Yeah. How did you come up with that idea?
That's such a great question. Are you familiar with the book Being Mortal by Atul Gawande?
No.
It is an amazing book. It is like my number one recommendation for reading about mortality, especially mortality in our culture, and the death phobia and how it creates really poor outcomes for people. And his message is really one of quality of life and asking people what matters to them and making it happen. So he started my entire journey into this. That was like 7 to 10 years ago. And
oh, wow.
One of his things that he does, so he has these questions he asks his patients. And it's basically, you know, getting to like, what matters to you? What outcomes do you want? What are your priorities? And that idea of asking people questions like that evolved. Like that like struck such a chord. And then I got into memory care and I tried to ask my own questions from residents there and find out things about them. And it literally transmuted through like, I think 5 to 7 different questionnaires. Because initially it was just like, what's your favorite song? What's your favorite snack? It was very reduced to something not super actionable. And then, yeah, it just evolved into something that's super easily conveyed and colorful and fun. It's a fun thing to make and fun thing to use.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess this is a good time to share. So I coined the term micro delights for these things and these moments we have. And I really like my definition for it. So I pulled it up. A micro delight is something small, significant, and easily added to someone's day that can bring great joy, deep peace, and meaningful connection.
Mm. I love it.
Yeah. They're so good. I love them so much.
So what are, do you have like some examples of what those are for you, or what you like, or maybe some moments that you've seen like with other people and how that's affected them?
Yeah, I have my happy map on the wall. So I'm just gonna like pull it down and see some of my favorites. And then I have some, like, yeah, I do have a few stories I love in memory care. Yeah, so what stands out to me? One of my things is, like, I take really hot showers. And, like, every day I take really hot showers. And they're just so calming to me. And so that's a really good one for people to know about me, is that, like, I want hot water. And it feels good to me. It's very grounding and peace-bringing. So it seems, you know, it seems so simple. But that's actually something that is really important to my sense of, you know, well-being. I love flowers. I have tattoos of flowers. I love to have flowers around me. I love to have stuff with flowers on them. And then, like, another one is that I love simple games. Like, I love to play Pac-Man and Tetris and Mario Kart. And so these are all facts where it's like, oh, yeah, that's just a simple fact about you. But it's like, I can move into a memory care community and have someone have no idea that I like my hot showers and flowers and games. And those three things alone, like, those are huge and so helpful to me feeling like grounded in a space and like happy and feeling like myself. So yeah, those are some of mine. Before I share some stories of people I've worked with, what are some, you've made a happy map, right?
I have. And as you were talking, I pulled mine up.
Nice. What are some of the things that stand out to you?
Yeah. Some of the things that stand out, walks with my dog are some of my favorites, especially because he is really stubborn when he walks. And that's not the fun part, but he loves to just roll around in grass, and he will just like do a half somersault, duck his head and like turn over and then just roll around happy as can be in the grass for honestly as long as you'll let him do it. But it brings me so much joy. Punk emo music from the early 2000s will always put me in a better mood. First, it will make me question how on earth I got through puberty, and then it'll make me really happy. puzzles and podcasts, especially D&D podcasts recently. I don't know what it is about them, but they make me so happy. They are just so much fun.
See, and I love that, because I didn't know all those things about you. Especially D&D. Not the D&D podcast, son. I know you like D&D, but I didn't know that, like, the podcast were like a thing for you.
Yeah, I started listening to Not Another D&D podcast, and it's just like these four friends that just make it's the dumbest story, and they're all comedians. They all work for like College Humor or something, but they're just so funny. And the first season of it is just really wholesome too. Like, they're just all best friends on this adventure, and it's just so cute.
Oh, that's cute.
I've also gotten very into nature. It's funny because, like, my parents would always, like, point out, you know, different plants when we were on walks. And as a kid, I was just like, oh, my God, stop looking at the plants. And now as an adult, I'm like, oh, my God, look at this plant. I don't know any of the names, and I don't really care to. I just like being like, that one is so cool. And I like touching them and feeling the textures, and especially like going along the same walk every day throughout the year, I get to see like which plants are blooming, which time of year, and some plants have like colorful berries, and yeah, it's really nice. It makes me very happy.
I love that. And that actually leads really well into some of the moments I've had with people in memory care. So I worked in a life enrichment position doing one-on-one or small groups. And they gave me essentially no resources whatsoever. They were just like, go, get to know them, do stuff. Which, you know, I took it and ran with it, obviously, because I'm doing this right now. But, you know, I really didn't know what I was doing. And so what I would do with them is take them outside for walks. Whether it was, you know, that I was pushing them in a wheelchair or going really slow with them in a walker. And that, you know, it was just something I did because it was available to me. It didn't cost money. It was just something I could just, you know, take them out and, you know, have some time with them. And every single resident loved it so much. And there were people who were weeks away from dying, who I would walk out in their wheelchairs and I would just hear them say, wow, this is beautiful. And yeah, just that, like, nature is such a huge micro delight that is so neglected in long-term care communities, and in any form of incarceration, or institutionalization. And yeah, there were people who couldn't see anymore, and I would put flowers in their hands. And one gentleman, when I put a flower in his hand, he told me, so I'd mentioned the flowers, but it didn't connect with his long-term memory as much. But when he held the flower, he was like, "Oh, I used to grow these amazing flowers for the whole neighborhood. And like, everyone knew that like my garden was like the talk of the neighborhood." And I think it was because he felt that, like, he had that body memory of it. So yeah, that's one component of the micro delights, nature. And I think it's one of the most overlooked. Like, you hear a lot about art and music for dementia care. And I'm like, get everybody outside. Everybody wants to be outside. And it's free. Yeah. The problem with it is that it takes a lot of effort. Like, you either have to go out one-on-one with people or corral like a large group to go out. So that's part of what makes it hard. But I'm also like what I always told caregivers is like, this gentleman is going to be just as happy sitting on the patio in the sun for 10 minutes as he is if you were to walk him around the entire building. Mm-hmm. That was actually the same gentleman. He was almost entirely deaf and completely blind. And he just loved to feel the sun on his skin. That was something that he could still experience. And he rarely ever got it. And not to get really dark and sad, but he died during COVID. And he did not see his family again. And he probably didn't see outside again since the last time I took him out. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's a lot of ways we can reimagine how we spend time with older people in ways that they and we can really, really enjoy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And now we have to segue.
We're going to sit with that for a bit.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, well, a question I was wondering is, what are some recent micro delights and small joys that you've enjoyed and maybe perhaps found particularly grounding in these times?
Well, I don't know if this was particularly grounding. Well, actually, this whole weekend was really nice. So I went to a festival this weekend, and I felt a little uncomfortable at times just with like COVID stuff, but you know, we were there and I was like, well, it's too late now, so you know, we leaned into it and we enjoyed the weekend. And when we were at the campground, we just like left our phones like away and just like sat in each other's company in the shade, and it was really nice. We like ate watermelon, and at one point I felt something slimy like on my hand, and I was like, bleh! I freaked out, and it was a little frog. And this little baby frog was like hopping along, so we gave him some water and we just watched him for a while. It was very cute.
That's so beautiful.
It was really lovely. It was a good reminder of just like being in the present moment and, you know, letting go of the things happening for a little bit. And like you said, it was like coming up for air. Yeah. It was good.
That's awesome.
What about you?
Yeah. So to preface this, something that I have a really hard time with, which I've been exploring in my own psyche, is school shootings. Mm-hmm. And they just really, really get to me. And it's hard for me, like, especially right now, the Parkland trial is going on, and it's like every single day for the next 3 months. Which is really good exposure therapy for me to be like, I'm not going to read that. I'm just like, I don't need to read those things. And so that's been kind of where my head's been at, is like struggling to not have intrusive thoughts about horrible things like that happen. And something I've realized is that one of the best ways for me to counter that is things like game shows. Like, the comedian Ron Funches is my partner and I's favorite person in the entire world. And he was just on Family Feud, Celebrity Family Feud. And then another, so game shows is one. And then another thing is like, we went for a date night to see Marcel the Shell, which was like just amazing. Like, I knew it was going to be cute, but it was just so wildly wholesome and like it was deeper than I thought. It was sadder than I thought, because I was like, this is just a cute movie to watch for fun. But it really explored like grief and aging and loss. But it did it so beautifully, where it kept you laughing and kept you seeing the beauty and everything, even through that, which is, feels very true to life, that you cry at the same time that you laugh and feel grateful. And yeah, just every single beat of that movie was just delightful. And those are the kinds of things that, like, I need something like that to take up the time that I would otherwise be doom scrolling.
Mm-hmm. I'll have to watch that movie. I wasn't as into Marcel the Shell as you were, but I did think it was cute, so I'll have to watch the movie.
Yeah, Maddie was like, I was never, what they say, this is like, I only was vaguely aware of it. I was never a super fan, and I was like, I remember not being a super fan, but just being like, oh my gosh, I love this little shell. And then it was like, it was one of those internet things that just like passes so quickly that it's just like on to the next thing. Because apparently there was 3 YouTube videos and multiple children's books.
And oh, I didn't know about the children's books.
Yeah, I missed all of that. I remember the first video. But yeah, and one of the things I wanted to talk about it too, because it relates to this podcast and what we do, is it was very heart-centered and very creative and collaborative. I don't know if you know this. You know Jenny Slate?
Mm-hmm.
So Jenny Slate's the voice of Marcel. She created it, and she created it with her then-husband, Dean Fleischerkamp. And they created it and love Marcel really deeply, and they could have sold out and done this for like millions of dollars and tons of like commercialism and toys and stuff like that. And they were very, very intentional about choosing a format that would stay true to who Marcel was, and the message. And they did that. And it's not this crazy profitable thing. You can't go get like a cute little talking Marcel the Shell, which I looked up because I want one. I was like, surely if you Google this, it'll be there, because of course, any movie that comes out, there's going to be like 500 toys based on it. Mm-hmm. And at least now I think you can really just get a stuffed animal. But so that's really the heart-centeredness of choosing the art over the profit and the story and the humanity. And then the other aspect of it is that they divorced between the time they first made the first one and now. And they were still able to collaborate and create something really beautiful, even though they are, you know, they are very divorced. They have both moved on with their lives. And I was thinking, you know, if they hadn't found that way to collaborate through conflict, we wouldn't have that. And I think the movie is really such a powerful narrative that you didn't get in the other ones. The other ones were just like, oh, Marcel's cute and saying cute things. And this one was like, really quite a beautiful story. So yeah, there's just so many layers to how beautiful it was.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah. It felt very on brand for us.
Yeah, definitely.
And what's really sad about it too is like, there's not a lot like that where you're like, wow, this was really like art that was made with such a like beautiful story behind it and a collaboration, and that they didn't sell out. Like, it's usually going to be something really small and indie, not something that's like brought to a big screen, but also maintains its creative integrity.
Mm-hmm.
Marcel repeatedly asks, have you ever eaten a raspberry? And if so, what was it like? And that, like, I want to ask everyone that all the time now. And it actually really speaks to the small joys thing, where it's like, a raspberry is such a magical thing that you can have. And like, have you eaten one? And what was your experience like? Like, I have a raspberry in the fridge. I want to go get one and just eat a single raspberry and like experience it.
Yeah, that's, I love that. Also, that's like kind of integrating mindfulness into it too, of just like, oh yeah, it was really awesome when I ate that raspberry that one time. Like something we just take for granted or never think of it again. And then this little shell like reminds us, hey, have you eaten one? Can you tell me what it was like?
Yeah, there is.
Oh, yeah, it was really good.
It was good. Yeah, one of the initial small shorts, Marcel like brings out a grape and is like, I told all my friends that I knew someone who could eat an entire grape. And they were like, BS, no way. And Marcel's like, to the documentarian, who's Dean, Marcel's like, can you eat a grape? And Dean's like, yeah, I can. It's just so funny. Like, we never think of something that, like, something that simple being, like, a magical thing that we get to experience simply because our mouths are big enough for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so cute.
Yeah, it's interesting, too, because it really did bring up the theme of small joys a lot, especially small joys in the face of aging and dying and grief. And that's, like, I just want to watch this movie again and again, because that's something that I really want to sit with.
I mean, especially with your line of work. And...
Yeah. I go to this movie, like, date night, super cute, fun thing. And then there's a part where Nana Connie, the grandma, she repeats herself. And it gets kind of, like, sad for a minute, because the implication is that she has memory loss. And I'm like, oh, no, it's a work movie now. Well, like, for a minute, I was so devastated, because I was like, oh, my gosh, it's going to do the thing where it gets really dark and depressing. And, you know, and some people who have listened to this know, like, my realm of dementia care is very contrary to the tragedy narrative that says that you can only experience it as this terrible, terrible thing. And literally the extent of how they navigate Nana Connie's memory loss is Marcel says she's lost a small piece of a very large puzzle. And that is now, like, the slogan of my practice. I'm going to use it all the time, because it really was, like, Nana Connie continued to be treated like a person and continue to experience life and share wisdom and feel connection. And, you know, Marcel just made sure that she was safe and taken care of. And yeah, it was really beautiful. I'm very grateful that Jenny Slate didn't ruin the entire movie for me.
Oh, yeah. That just reminded me. Have I talked to you about the show She-Ra?
I don't think so.
Have you watched it or heard of it?
I vaguely heard of it, but I know nothing about it.
So I love that show so much. I just rewatched it. But there's a character in it named Raz, who like, lives in the woods, and she's just like this wild old woman. And she, like, is always having trouble with her memory. And then, like, later on in the show, spoilers if anybody wants to watch or hasn't watched. I mean, it's not that big of a spoiler, but it's a spoiler. Anyway, but the way they basically show her as, like, this time traveler, because she's always, like, hopping back into her old memories and, like, thinks she's there. And so then it shows her, like, flashing back and talking to Mara, who was the original She-Ra. And, like, it's so sweet to, like, watch. And then she, like, ends up, like, she basically saves the day that way, because she's hopping back and forth and, like, sharing these memories with the past and the future She-Ras. And it's really sweet and really lovely.
Oh, I love that so much. I love it so much. And that's actually something in my From Panic to Power program. One of the things we look at is different conceptualizations of dementia. And one of my favorites is time traveling, because mm-hmm. you really can, like, if your loved one thinks that they're in the 50s with their husband, you can, like, sit with them and experience life with them, with their husband in their 50s, and hear the things they say that you might not know. And that's something we've really missed when we say it's only a tragedy. Like, mm-hmm. then it happens where it's like, oh my gosh, she thinks she's, like, in a different time and place, and it's terrible, it's a horrible thing, and this is such a bad symptom, and what do we do to treat this? Instead of just being like, I'm in the 50s now, and I'm, like, finding out new stuff.
Yeah. Well, and, like, how much better would it be if you were the person with dementia, if, like, instead of people bringing you out of that time travel, they were like, no, you're here, you're not there, and then causing confusion. It's like, well, what if they just let you be in the 50s, you know?
Yeah, that's been a thing in the past. They called it reality orientation, where they thought that the right way to treat everybody with dementia was to constantly reorient them towards reality, which is something that can be helpful in early stages. If someone, like, doesn't know what month it is and they're still really with it, you can be like, yeah, so it's August. But yeah, in those later stages, when people are just where they are, like, a phrase that I've started using lately is following their lead and just being wherever they are. because it is, it's incredibly jarring when someone's like, no, you're absolutely wrong about your entire sense of reality, especially if you're doing something like enjoying time with who you think is your husband. Which is interesting because this all ties back to small joys too, is like, if they're finding a joy somewhere, you know, let them have it, be there with them and enjoy it with them.
Yeah. I do appreciate that about, small joys too, of just like taking you out of, well, I guess not exactly. I was going to say taking you out of reality, but it's not. It's like a profound experience of reality. Sure. I guess it's what I'm trying to say is like, it's putting down your guard more instead of, you know, like as we age, especially like we think we have to put on a certain face all the time. And then when you're like experiencing a really profound, tiny joy for a moment, like, and you can just have that smile on your face, feeling like a kid, and it just like takes you out of that way that you think you have to be.
Yeah. Yeah. That's how I feel about memory care. As I think a lot of people are like, why do you like memory care? And I'm like, I get to see people experience those moments of joy and see those smiles on their faces all day, every day. And yeah, it is, you know, when something's assumed to be this terrible experience, and then there's actually so much joy in it and so many moments where you can connect with someone, like that's a really beautiful thing to explore because it feels like a treasure hunt. And it feels like you get mm-hmm. to put the treasure there.
Do you have like a small joys practice that you integrate into your life, or did you used to until it just kind of became second nature? How could people start to tune in to like the small joys in their life?
That's a really good question. It was actually kind of what I wanted to end on too, is like how we redirect ourselves towards small joys when we find that we're not enjoying them or noticing them. And it's really hard for me because my ADHD makes it really hard to have any practice or ritual or anything like that. And that's actually part of the reason micro delights were something that made sense to me and something that I coined and identified in people, because it's the same for people living with dementia, that it's the small moments that make sense to them. Like if you try to sit 25 people with dementia down for an hour long art program, they're probably not going to connect with it that entire time the same way as they would of having many different micro delights through their day. So I was often like a little butterfly going around to different people, making sure they had the music they like and their coffee the way they like it and their newspaper. So I think they lend well to building them in really small here and there. And when you start looking for them, you start seeing them more and more. So it doesn't have to be a, you know, formalized practice of like, you know, well, I'm going to, you know, do this particular thing. It's just starting to notice. And that, I guess, as I'm saying this, this goes back to when I was in high school and I was really depressed, I started keeping a gratitude journal, which has been like a bit overused these days. Like, I feel like it's now seen as like a, like, it's almost like a homework assignment where it's like, well, you got to do your gratitude journal. And now how I use it is I write them down when I feel led to do it. So after our move, I wrote down a bunch of gratitudes that I hadn't had time to reflect on. When I need to pay more attention to them, I write them down more. So I might get my gratitude journal out and just keep it around and just write them down when I notice them. Because once you start noticing them, you see them everywhere. It's kind of like a confirmation bias thing.
I was reading The Power of Fun a couple weeks ago. And she's talking about the Book of Delights, and again, just like that, you start to find them, and you will see them everywhere. And she talked about how he, like, calls it out when he sees it, like, delight! Like, he says the word, which is so cute. So I started doing that a couple weeks ago, like, on my walks, and it was pretty cute. I don't know if it'll stick, but it was fun when I did it. But, like, yeah, for me, I have in my planner, there's like a section for like good things that happened through the week. And I think in the past I may have been like, no, well, it has to be like a really good thing that happened. But like, I was looking back at some of the things that I wrote down and I just literally, I claw my way through the week and try to find something that was good. like, 'cause there are some weeks that are just bad. And so like, there's one that's like, there was a double rainbow today. I saw a double rainbow. That is good. And it happened. So I write that in my planner. And then if I am feeling particularly down, I'll like add 5 things I'm grateful for at the end of my journal entry for the day.
Yeah, I found that I have relied on my gratitude journal the most at the times in my life when I felt like there was no possible way I could think of any. And then, you know, it's kind of like a muscle that you, at first you're like, I can think of 2 things. And then, you know, you start to think of more.
Yeah. And sometimes it is just like so small of like, the sky was blue today and it was a nice blue.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, that's a good conversation we just had, because I think it feels really relevant in a lot of ways.
It does. And I don't know about you, but like, as we're talking about it, I'm like, I could use some small joys. Even though I just had like a really nice weekend, it feels very jarring to be back home, and then I'm leaving again tomorrow. So I'm having a hard time like finding a ton of joy at the moment, but I know it'll be good. I'm going to see like my nephews and my brother and sister-in-law and my parents, and it'll be good, but I'm tired.
I think they're hardest to find, at least for me, when I feel really frantic and frazzled. And I know earlier you mentioned when we were talking outside of this conversation, feeling frantic lately. And yeah, I think when we're kind of on like the fast forward, it's hard to see them, because I think they kind of thrive in slowness and having time to pay attention and the headspace to do it. So it can be hard to do it when we're not. So yeah, sometimes it's so hard to like put my foot on the brake, but sometimes I'll like sit outside for just 5 minutes and just be like, okay, I'm not moving for these 5 minutes, which I guess is meditation and mindfulness, but I don't think of it that way, because my brain is like, I don't meditate. I can't concentrate, but I can sit outside for 5 minutes. My favorite micro delights right now are my hummingbird feeder and my roses. We moved in here and there's roses. I would not have gotten them put it in myself, but it's a beautiful, beautiful bush. We probably have like 30 blooming right now.
Wow.
And they're big yellow fragrant ones. They're so beautiful. Like you literally cannot stop, or like you cannot help but stop to smell the roses, because they just smell so good.
Yeah. Oh, I love that.
Yeah. They make it easy. Those are the ones that like seeing the hummingbird, being outside smelling the flowers, like that stops me in my tracks. And those are the ones I like a double rainbow, where you're like, oh my gosh, delight.
Yeah. Yeah, I think right now, delights through my day are the walks with my dog, like I mentioned earlier, and watching this one spider plant that I have grow. I chopped it because it was looking really sad. Just like it didn't matter what I did. It was just wilted and pathetic looking. And I know that it was root bound and I didn't know what to do with it. And I was just like, okay, we're just going to chop you down to the stubs and then repot you and see what you do. And normally that would have resulted in just a dead plant, but this time it did not. And it is growing back. And so every day I just like go check on it and see what it's doing, and it's growing, and that's exciting.
That's so exciting. That plants are a big one for me. Like just seeing them grow and that I haven't killed them is just so lovely.
Oh yeah. It's such an accomplishment, especially for me. I've killed so many plants.
Yeah, I realized, it took me a long time to realize, the reason that I let plants die is because I know, like, between me and my dogs and paying rent, like, those are the priorities. And plants, it's like, you can let them die. And there's not, you know, a huge ethical connotation to it. But I always just feel so bad every time.
I know. I do, too. Yeah. Well, have you made anything ugly this week?
That's a good question, and I totally had one, and I can't remember it. what was it? Maybe the ugly thing is that I can't remember the ugly thing. let me keep thinking about it, but have you made anything ugly this week?
Not this week, but last week was Come As You Art on Thursday, and 2 of my fellow editors joined me, and it was really fun. Yeah, it was good. So I made a seawater underwater landscape because I just like drew a random little shape and it ended up looking like a fish. So then I drew more fishes. And then I made a really creepy jack-o'-lantern looking octopus.
Cool. A jack-o'-lantern and an octopus together sounds so cool. Like, it makes sense.
Well, like, I love, because like whenever I'm making ugly art and I'm just like, huh, I wonder how I could make this more ugly. I'm like, give it weird shapes for a face. So this one looks like a jack-o'-lantern.
I love how, like, when you do ugly art, you can start to have, like, a little, like, toolbox of the, like, techniques you can use to make it uglier.
Yeah. It's, like, at least for my toolbox, it's, like, just draw a line through it. Just, like, whatever it is, just, like, draw a line. Or make weird shapes into a face. And those are my go-tos. Yeah.
I do a lot of little monsters that are weird shapes. And then, did you ever use, like, a spirograph when you were a kid?
Yeah, those are fun.
Yeah, I like doing those just, like, by hand. Like, just, like, ugly spirographs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I literally cannot remember my ugly thing, and I'm so sad about it because I took last week off. And I know at some point in that week I did something ugly, and I cannot remember.
That's all right.
It means I need to do more so that I remember more.
Yes. Is there anything that you want to plug or tell people where to find you?
I am not currently, like, actively promoting anything, but I love to connect with people on my Instagram page. That's where I share a lot of the philosophies that I come from and kind of, like, stigma busting. So it's instagram.com/letsmakemoments.
Awesome. Yeah, and people can find me also on Instagram at Scribe and Sunshine. And as far as things to plug, I just recorded my Perfectionism workshop and created a workbook to go along with it. And so that is for sale. You can watch it in your own time and go through the workbook. And you can find it through the link on my Instagram. I still have not put it on my website because I hate designing website things, and so I've been putting it off, but it will be available at some point. But you can find the workshop itself is on a website called Ko-Fi. That's Ko-Fi. And then I will have a coaching program soon. I just haven't gotten the details ironed out yet, but it will be for people, specifically writers and creatives who let their perfectionism get in the way. It is a coaching program that will probably be about 3 months long. That will kind of help you develop tools to push past perfectionism and start getting your work out there into the world.
Yay! I'm so excited for you to have a coaching program.
Me too. Making a program is very complicated to me. I don't know why it's been so, like I had the bare bones for it, and I was just like, something's not clicking. And so, you know, I did my thing where I just, like, let it sit for a while. I just didn't think about it. And so then I was like, oh, it needs to be a shorter program. It shouldn't be like an indefinite program. And like, there'll probably be like a club associated with it. Like, if you want to hang around afterwards, that's fine. But like, the program itself needs a time limit because like, you're just not going to need like consistent coaching for months and months and months. It's just, I mean, you might, but probably not. Anyway, me rambling about details of planning things. Yeah. Well, this was good. Thank you for talking to me about small joys.
Yeah. Thank you for reminding me that we were planning on talking today.
Of course. Well, keep it ugly, everybody.
Keep it ugly.
The Ugly Podcast is created by Emerson Lee of Happy Memories Elder Support and Lauren Alexander of Scribe and Sunshine. It is produced by us and directed by absolutely no one. If you like the podcast, be sure to rate and leave a review on your preferred platform and share with the creatives and entrepreneurs in your life. Keep it ugly, everybody.